Welcome to the Texas Appellate Law Podcast, proudly presented by Butler Snow, where we cover topics of interest to lawyers handling appellate matters in Texas courts and beyond. This podcast demystifies appellate law and pulls back the curtain on the appellate system through conversations with judges, court staff, and top trial and appellate practitioners. Listen in to discover best practices and tips for successfully presenting your case, managing your docket, and promoting efficiency through legal technology. And now, here are your hosts, Todd Smith and Jody Sanders.
You're listening to the Texas Appellate Law Podcast. I'm Todd Smith.
And I'm Jody Sanders.
Listeners, you're stuck with me and Jody by ourselves today. We decided it had been a while since we recorded an episode with just the two of us, and it was high time we came back and did that. We've been so fortunate and blessed with just an abundance of great guests over the course of the show, and we haven't done these guestless episodes all that often. They're fun when we do them, and we thought we'd come back to it, but rest assured, you're not going to have to listen to just the two of us talk about appellate law for very long, because we've got a new episode coming the week after this one and many more great guests lined up to engage you all in good conversation with us. So, but I thought, Jody, what we might talk about today is some of the things we've had going on that are related to the podcast, but not directly. We have had the opportunity, as a result of the two of us doing this show now for 70 plus episodes, to sort of extend its reach into other media. And so I thought we'd chat briefly about some of the social chat stuff we've been doing, and also some interviews that you and I have done, including some that have been published on other podcasts or are coming up on other podcasts. Because we can get into the meta analysis of podcasting about podcasting, which is a lot of fun. And then finally, I thought what we might do is on Twitter this week, we sort of opened up the idea of a mailbag segment to the show, where we might try to answer listener questions posed to us through Twitter. So I'd like to give it a go on those three topics if we can, and we'll see where we are at the end.
Sounds good to me.
Well, I'll kind of lead us off on the social chat stuff. Because we like to experiment with stuff, and because I can't leave shiny objects alone, we kind of got on board with the Clubhouse wave there for a while. And so early on, we were experimenting with that medium, which, if you don't know what Clubhouse is, it's essentially an audio social media platform where it's all verbal. You can connect with a number of other people who happen to be in the same room, is what they call it. It's like a giant conference call, but moderated by the folks that are hosting the room. And it really kind of took the world by storm several months ago, probably going on a year ago now, actually. I think it's sort of subsided since then, but we had a good experience with hosting some rooms to talk about appellate law and having some guests come on and join us in that format. But we've kind of moved on to Twitter Spaces since then, which is a direct competitor of Clubhouse, but functions basically the same way, where someone hosts the space, as we call it, in that on that platform. And then people can come and listen in. And the two platforms are alike in the sense that you can raise your hand and be invited to come up and speak and engage in conversation directly with the people who are already in the room talking, with some moderation features in play. So I don't know, what are your thoughts on how that whole thing has evolved, Jody, and where we are with it right now?
I think in terms of what we're doing, it hasn't really changed other than the platform. And I'm not sure that the platforms are much different other than Clubhouse requires you to have a new app and a new membership. And I think still requires an invitation to join. And Twitter Spaces just seemed a little bit more of a natural fit since there's already the appellate Twitter community built in. But in terms of the user experience and the simplicity of getting on and everything, I don't think they're much different. And I don't think our content really changes between it. In fact, earlier this week, we did one with Justice Brett Busby from the Texas Supreme Court, and it seemed like it went well and it was well attended. You know, people can drop in and drop out and ask questions. So, you know, I've enjoyed doing it, and it's just kind of fun to have a live, just kind of interactive. I mean, I can't say less scripted because our podcast isn't really scripted either, but just kind of a discussion about whatever comes up, and then get people from the audience to come in and chat and ask questions and add observations. It's been really fun.
It really has been. And it does seem like Twitter was sort of the natural place for us to settle, based on the appellate Twitter community already existing there. You know, a lot of our appellate friends in Texas and beyond are following the hashtag and engaging in conversation there regularly. Plus, we, the podcast, and you and I individually, all are pretty active on Twitter. And so what we've done with these Twitter spaces and Clubhouse rooms before that is actively publicize them through the TechSap Law Pod Twitter account. And then you and I will each sort of try and promote that within our own Twitter accounts. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really helped to engage people. Those episodes do go, I call them episodes because it really does feel kind of like recording a podcast in some ways, but with that added element of live conversation with other people, that's what we don't get with podcasting. I mean, now mm-hmm. it's just you and me on a Zoom call recording and talking, and you're right. I hope nobody thinks that our episodes are very closely scripted, because they're not.
No, not at all.
And so, I mean, I've heard very closely scripted podcasts before, and I actually really prefer the way that we do it, which is we just kind of let it develop organically and wherever the conversation takes us.
Anything can happen.
We've been very fortunate to not have, you know, any cat lawyer incidents, live recording, but we also have the benefit, unlike the social chat platforms, we have the benefit of being able to edit. And so maybe that's why, as I've said many times, the show actually seems like sometimes it makes us sound better than we actually are, because mm-hmm. we've got that editorial feature. But, you know, one of the nice things really about the social chat, going back to Twitter spaces, is it really does evolve into just about anything. And we've been very, very fortunate in that the folks who have asked to come up, raise their hand during those conversations, have been appropriately respectful of the guests that we've had and really engaged them and I think meaningful questions and meaningful mm-hmm. conversations. And so we've had a number of our former podcast guests who have visited with us that way. We had Judge Miskell was one of our early guinea pigs. I think our very early one when we were still doing it on Clubhouse was Kristen Lafreniere, also known as KVP.
Right.
We had Judge Ken Wise from the Court of Appeals in Houston was game and actually downloaded Clubhouse and came on with us. And Professor Walensky, who I think you've got a neat connection with based on your Michigan ties. You know, I talk about ways that podcasting can affect the real world. I mean, I think you actually got to have lunch with her when you were out of state this summer, didn't you?
Yeah, when I was in Michigan. That's the power of appellate Twitter. You can find someone pretty much anywhere you go that you know and have a nice lunch. Yeah, it was great getting to see Beth.
Yeah, that's really, I mean, in what other world could that really have happened? Mm-hmm. You know, you think about even going back 10 years ago, how did this come about? Well, appellate Twitter is one thing, but here's someone that I certainly didn't know before we had her on the podcast. We had her on as a refresh guest, which is kind of what we affectionately call our follow-up social chat episodes. And I mean, it's really been neat to follow her more closely and get to know her more. And I think it's been really kind of what we set out to do with the podcast. It's just illustrative of that, you know, really this is for us, for me, at least, it's about, you know, making connections with people and building some sense of community. And it, that's the downside of this medium. Podcasting strictly is, it is just me and you here on a Zoom call, but I've been really surprised, quite pleasantly surprised at how far beyond that the reach has gone, which is kind of what we're talking about today. I'd be remiss if I didn't mention, you already pointed out that we talked with Justice Busby, but one of my favorite follow-up or refresh conversation so far was when we had Judge Roy Ferguson on. We had an extremely meaningful conversation with him in which he really just laid it all bare as far as his position on access to justice and how he feels about technology and the courtroom and practice of law. And I see that Judge Ferguson is in the news again, because not anything on the scale of Lawyer Cat, but he's been tweeting about and reminding us lawyers to be careful what we say on Twitter, because as he points out, and other judges have echoed this, judges do pay attention to Twitter, and they talk amongst themselves, I should say. And I actually saw in the article that was out on that recently, a lawyer who seemed to be rather anonymous, unsurprisingly, kind of snapped back and said he felt like that Judge Ferguson, by pointing these things out, was expressing that he couldn't be impartial. I just don't see that at all.
I think having opinions about litigants is not the same as being impartial. You can decide a legal issue impartially, but you still have knowledge of lawyers in your court, good or bad, which is why credibility and reputation is so important.
Agreed. And the analogy that I've heard and read Judge Ferguson using is, it's like shouting into a megaphone on the courthouse lawn. So it's not any different. Judges were always going to talk in chambers or wherever it may be about the performance and character of lawyers who appear in their court. This is really not any different to me. And so I think Judge Ferguson is spot on, gives great advice. You know, just be careful. It's like what we were all told when we first started as young associates in a law firm. You know, don't put anything in writing. Back then we were talking about email, but don't put anything in writing or on Twitter that you wouldn't want to be attached as an exhibit in a motion filed in court. I think it's okay, obviously, to have opinions, but coming back to the theme of the day, I mean, it's just so great that we've got these connections, that we're able to follow these people and then ultimately, you know, plug into these opinions and talk about the issues that are timely and public and in these times.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I mean, I just love the learning aspect of it. I've learned so much. Every single episode, I learned something, but just overall thinking about the last year and a half, all the guests, all the different types of discussions we've had, I've learned so much that has changed the way that I think about practicing the law, the court system. I mean, all of those things, technology, I love it.
Yeah, it's been a blast. And we're going to keep doing it for a good long time. So just to kind of loop back on Twitter Spaces and what we're planning to do with that, we've kind of settled on a monthly schedule for those follow-up sessions. We're going to do them on the first Tuesday of every month, generally at 5 p.m. Central Time, which is where we are. And they'll go, we generally allot an hour for those. And out of respect for everyone's schedules, that's getting toward the end of the day and folks who are trying to get home and take care of their personal stuff. We generally cut those off promptly at 6 p.m. So there is a bit of a fuse lit on those. But I think that's the practice that we're going to continue. And so we'll be bringing back some previous guests, continuing from what we did last week. We'll do one the first Tuesday of October at 5 p.m. And I'll be posting about that online through the podcast Twitter page. We'll be promoting that. So keep your eyes open for that.
And if you're a past guest, excuse me, and you'd like to do one, reach out to us because we'd love to have you plugged in. And if you are not a past guest but want to be a future guest, reach out too, because we'd love to have you.
Absolutely. We actually did create, to that point, a form that potential guests can fill out. If you go to the podcast webpage, it's available at techsapplawpod.com. You scroll toward sort of the middle of that page before you get to the substantive episodes. There's a link, I think it's a bit.ly link, that will take you to a landing page that will allow you to fill out a form and express interest in coming on the show. If you know someone who would be good, feel free to send them that link too and let them know that we're certainly happy to consider bringing them on, because one thing that I have learned through this whole process is there are just so many different perspectives that people can bring to the practice of appellate law and appellate judging that I really hadn't considered before. I think one of my favorite things about our show, Jody, is the fact that we have spent quite a bit of time fairly recently talking about criminal appeals. Mm-hmm. And I just find that so fascinating. And with both of us being civil appellate lawyers, it's just not something that comes across our desk day to day. And so it's really been a pleasure to talk with a couple of court of criminal appeals judges and some criminal practitioners. And I'm pleased to say that we've got more of that coming up. And I think it will be very interesting to our listeners.
Yep, that's exactly right.
All right. Well, I think we can make the transition then to talking about some of the things we've been doing outside the podcast and outside the social chat stuff. It's been interesting that you and I have been approached about actually being on the other side of the microphone and giving some interviews, largely about the podcast. You want to tell them about our recent interview with our alumni magazine?
Yeah. So Todd and I got the chance this week to interview with the TCU Alumni Magazine. We're not entirely sure yet if it was the TCU Alumni Podcast, the TCU Alumni Magazine, or both. We think it's definitely the podcast that'll be out sometime in October, just kind of talking about, because we are both Horned Frog alums. That doesn't come up very often on our show, but we are both Horned Frogs. We're there at different times when it's just kind of a neat connection. And so we were interviewed for the alumni podcast and kind of talked about our experiences at TCU, kind of how our podcast started, how we got to know each other, and just kind of how that's gone. So that was a lot of fun to talk about that. And we'll post a link or post something on social media when that comes out.
It had been a while. I guess I did do one other podcast as a guest recently that I'll mention here in a minute, but I used to think that it was much easier being the guest on a podcast. And after that last experience, I'm not so sure.
Yeah, I think that that's fair. You're the one who's in the hot seat having to answer the questions instead of just getting to ask them and listen.
Yeah, it was getting put on the spot about the activities I was engaged in many, many years ago at TCU. I really had to think hard about that. But
luckily,
I thought
the statute of limitations had run on all of them, so it was okay.
Yes, and that may have been an issue for me at some point. But it was fun, though, especially because we don't get to talk a lot about that commonality between us. You know, it is interesting that we happen to pick the same undergraduate institution. And I have the pleasure of getting back to TCU regularly because my older son is a sophomore there this year. But it does give us an excuse. We really haven't been able to take advantage of it yet, but it does give us an excuse to get together in person once we kind of get a little past the Delta variant and make sure that everybody's safe and protected. We do intend to record some shows live. And, you know, if we can somehow work the Horned Frogs into the mix, that would be great. That may not appeal to too many of our overall listeners, but it is sort of a neat commonality. Again, talking about shared experience and community, I think it is something that that helps in terms of hosting a podcast with someone. You know, it's really nice to have those sort of common interests too.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right.
There was another one too. We recently were approached by a Texas lawyer. And gave an interview to Texas Lawyer about the podcast. It is interesting. We we get asked the question, how did this thing start up? And we won't repeat the whole story here today, because we'll refer you to those podcasts when they come out, if you want to hear that whole story. But, and we do talk about it off and on in previous episodes of the show, but, I'm looking forward to that one coming out, because as always, I tend to think, you know, we're not really the target of attention when we do podcast episodes for this show. We're trying to connect with the person who is in the proverbial hot seat and kind of bring out their expertise and their knowledge and showcase them. So it had me feeling just a little bit awkward and maybe even a bit uncomfortable.
Yeah,
being in that hot seat. I'm glad to recollect the history of how we got together over a year and a half ago. The other one that I was on recently is one called Small But Mighty by a group called Conversations LLC. They really focus their efforts on marketing for solo and small firms. But before I came over to Butler Snow, I worked with them directly. And so I've got to know the CEO really well. She had me on for a really short interview that focused a lot on what it was like to start a podcast from scratch and sort of the intimidation factor in that of, oh my gosh, how do I do this? Because I mean, I feel like podcasts are more common and increasingly so. People have had a lot of time on their hands in the last 18 months to, you know, get in front of the mic and hit record. But I think one thing that we brought to this, it was very well thought through and planned out. Having a niche in the podcasting industry, like many others, is, I think, essential to really connecting with a certain audience. Because, you know, it's like publishing your journal online back in the days of blogging. It was like, who wants to read? And maybe even in the early days of social media too, who wants to read about what you had for breakfast, you know, your day-to-day, every little bit of your life? And I think podcasting is kind of like that too. We were really careful to focus on something that we thought people might be interested in hearing about. And within our topic of appeals, we've covered a lot of breadth, you know, many, many different substantive areas. We've enjoyed, we recently had Wesley Lloyd on to talk about oil and gas, which was something that we hadn't covered before. And I think we're going to probably get into sort of more of that substantive area kind of topic, like much like we've done with the criminal law stuff. And I think that's something that people will enjoy hearing about. That's where I think I learned the most. I love those substantive episodes, although talking to judges is great. I get a lot out of those too. And then I love especially the technology episodes, because that really speaks to the inner tech dork in me. And so we'll be looking to do some more of those too. It's been a lot of fun.
It has.
I think I mentioned the name of the podcast I was on. It's called Small But Mighty. We'll put a link to that in the show notes if anybody's interested in hearing about how to start a podcast, a legal podcast. I'll leave that to you all. What else, Jody?
That is kind of all that's been going on with the podcast. We've been trying to find different ideas on guests and topics. So again, if you have something you'd like to hear about substantive wise, let us know, because we're always looking for new ideas and trying to think outside the box. But we've got some good stuff coming up in the legal tech space. We've got a lot more people scheduled that have kind of different practice areas and interests than we do. And so that's one of the things that I always love, is just learning about different areas of the law that I don't know about.
Yeah, the only hard part about that is feeling some pressure to try and ask intelligent questions.
I don't feel bad about that. I just ask stupid questions and let them educate me.
You know, if you ever wanted to know what we would be like potentially in taking a deposition, and I haven't done that in quite a long time, the podcast is probably a good window into what that might be like, and probably a good indicator as to why I don't do it very much.
Yeah, there's a reason we're appellate lawyers and why no one has called me in the last 18 months to hire me to take depositions.
Well, let's move on then to the last thing we thought we might talk about today, which is this mailbag segment.
Yeah, so we put out a call the other day just for questions about appellate practice and on Twitter, just to see if anybody would give us any thoughts. And we did get one from Ben Garcia, who asked us, would there be any benefit for a single intermediate court of appeals with multiple divisions? What's the advantage to having 14 separate courts of appeals, each with their own precedent? Should the structure change? I mean, we could easily do probably a 4-hour episode on this and have lots of different guests, but since it's just Todd and me, I figured we'd just kind of give our hot sports opinions, which are totally our own opinions. We're not speaking for anybody else. And we haven't really even bothered to do any research on this topic right now. So you're just going to get some off the cuff stuff. I think my answer to the overall question, would there be a benefit to a single intermediate court of appeals with multiple divisions? I think broadly speaking, from if I had, you know, the ability to just start from scratch and do over, yeah, there probably would. I think in a state as large as Texas, having kind of a centralized intermediate court of appeals system would make some sense. I think the reality of trying to do that now would be really, really difficult, both in terms of the political will it would take to get it done. And I think in terms of just the practical structure and movement and all that kind of stuff, it would make it difficult. But I can certainly see on an intellectual level, a lot of benefits to having sort of a streamlined court of appeals, sort of like a lot of other states do, where you have, you know, one court of appeals or court of civil appeals at the state level, but then you just have different geographic regions. I will say, though, I think we sort of have the system that makes sense in the way that we do judicial selection, which is political partisan elections, because I think that there is, you know, it kind of fits in the niche of Texans like to elect their judges, or at least they have historically, and so far that has not changed. And I think as long as we're doing that, the sort of geographic-based local court of appeals model kind of makes more sense, because you actually have judges who are a little bit more accountable to the local voters, in theory. Now, in reality, I don't know that that makes a whole lot of difference, but I think in theory it makes a lot of sense to do it that way, because they're making the decisions for the people in their district that are voting, and it's a, you know, relatively speaking, smaller district as opposed to a state with 30 million people. And so I think that there's some of that there. And I think that there's a lot of probably power struggles, even as we just saw this summer when they proposed a Court of Appeals district realignment. I think that there's some power struggles and some questions about how you draw those lines, where you draw those lines. And so I think that it's hard to decide how you make those changes. I think the initial model was kind of the big cities got them. And then as it expanded out, even some of the smaller cities that maybe had some powerful state interest, state lobbying interest, or state representatives or senators kind of got those there, and they've just kind of been there. So I guess the advantage to having 14 separate courts of appeals with their own precedent is that you sort of have some local accountability. You have judges in that area that get to know the trial judges, that get to know the voters, that get to know the people with interest. And so there's some of that that I think is reflected in that model. Should the structure change? I mean, I think there's probably room for improvement. I think the question is how you do it. And I just don't know, without reforming Texas judicial elections generally, how you change the structure without running into a whole lot of political headwinds that are going to make that really hard. So that's my two cents on the whole thing. I think there's probably a lot smarter people that have better opinions, but just off the cuff, that's kind of what I was thinking on those things.
Well, I think you did a good job of covering it. It was interesting to me when we interviewed Judge Stephen Dillard from the Court of Appeals of Georgia, when he confirmed that Georgia, a state the size of Georgia, had one single intermediate court of appeals, that really surprised me, because I'm so used to our 14 intermediate court system. Mm-hmm. And I mean, Georgia's not a small state, and there are plenty of other judges that we've visited with from other states that have a similar system, where basically the trial courts go up to one consolidated court of appeals with just, as the question was suggesting, that may sit in different regions. As with everything else, as being Texans, we have to do things differently.
That's right.
It should come as no surprise to anyone. One thing I thought about just as you were talking was the system that we have might actually lead to sort of more robust development of a common law. Mm-hmm. Because you've got a lot of different viewpoints coming in from courts throughout the state. You know, we have a very diverse state. Geography is diverse. The economies are diverse overall throughout the state. And, you know, how the Court of Appeals sitting in Edinburgh, Texas, in the far southern tip of our state would decide an issue, you know, would it be the same as the Court of Appeals sitting up in Amarillo in the panhandle? Who knows? You know, the people in those regions might have different priorities. The judges may have different backgrounds. And so they may approach an issue completely differently from each other and from other courts in other parts of the state, you know, in the major metro areas, for example. So it's probably true that we do get a better mix of viewpoints having all the different courts that we have. And then the Texas Supreme Court gets the job of ultimately saying, you know, how those viewpoints ought to be synthesized and aligned into, you know, the law of Texas. Mm-hmm. So it is kind of a messy system. It's great for appellate lawyers.
It is.
You know, 14 intermediate courts, you know, it's a good place to be in that way. Mm-hmm. But I do think it would be far different in a unified court, even sitting in even if they were geographic regions. And our state's so big, that's, I can't really think of any other way of doing it.
No.
So I'm not sure as a practical matter, I guess to that point, that it would really be all that different. If we cut it in half and had seven geographic regions, you're still talking about the influence of a lot of different judges and mm-hmm. Economies and all that. So maybe it wouldn't change all that much, but I do think aside from that potential benefit of having the law develop a little more favorably, speaking specifically about common law, of course, because so much of our law anymore is statutory, there is the idea of sort of local representation on the appellate bench. And maybe that would still carry through in a unified system with divisions. But it is nice to, you know, when we're doing live events, it is nice to see the judges show up locally. Judges tend to know the lawyers. The appellate judges tend to know the lawyers. Many of the appellate judges were former trial judges. And so there's not really this promotion system. You know, you don't have to be a trial judge before you get a position as an appellate justice. But there is some of that flow, you know, sort of upward sometimes. And I don't know. I don't know how the other way of doing things would really affect what we're used to in our local bars and local legal communities. But that was an interesting question. So thanks to Ben for bringing that up. And please, you know, if anytime, shoot us a message on Twitter and ask a question. If we wind up making this segment sort of a regular feature on the podcast, we'll try to answer those questions as best we can. I think it was kind of fun to do sort of, as Jody said, the hot sports opinion approach to it, which is, well, this is what I think. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, just with all the caveats, of course, that's the appropriate way of handling it. I do want to mention one last thing. I know we said we're going to talk about three, but I want to throw out a fourth topic just because I think it's good news for us and it's good news for the appellate bar throughout the state. And that is that you and I both have been called for in-person oral arguments coming mm-hmm. up pretty soon. You've got one coming up this month. We're recording this on the 10th of September. So by the time this episode airs, you will likely be done with your mm-hmm. oral argument. I've got one set for October 12th in Houston. And both of those are actually live. And so I'm super happy to be back in the courtroom live.
Yep.
And I think you are too. But it was interesting that I think we were chatting before we started recording that the intermediate appellate courts seem to have adopted sort of a standardized protocol for how they're going to conduct these live proceedings. They're going to restrict access to a certain number of people in the courtrooms. I know I haven't looked at this again before we started recording today, but they were going to make plans to clean the facility, you know, clean the council table and the lectern between arguments. And I hadn't really appreciated this, Jody, but I think you pointed out that they were actually scheduling, rather than the docket call at 9 a.m., they're actually setting arguments for a specific time for each one. Is that right?
I know that's how they're doing it in Fort Worth. I don't know about other courts, but that's been my experience here. They started doing them again in April, and that seems to be how they're doing it. It's just, you know, one at 9, one at 10, one at 11, one at 1:30, 2:30, and so on until they get through the whole day, instead of just having everybody come at 9 and wait till you're called.
Well, put me down as someone that, in addition to certain aspects of Zoom hearings, not oral arguments in appellate courts, hopes that that's something that sticks, because I don't mind, you know, going and hanging around the courthouse that much. But if I'm the third person called on a 9 a.m. docket, if I'm the third case called, that means I have to go and sit around. And, you know, I tend to get a little restless before oral argument, and mm-hmm. I would probably do better to have a little shorter time to wait. And I know, you know, my comfort is not the court's chief concern. I get that. But it does seem, most of the time, it does seem like the arguments generally stay within their allotted time, except for exceptional cases, which are usually set specially anyway. So it does seem like that would be a really nice benefit of all of this, is to have an allotted time for your argument. Maybe there's good reasons for not doing it that way. I'm sure it's not quite as convenient for the court staff and checking in, making sure everybody's there who's supposed to be there. It might increase the workload on that to some degree. But knowing you have an argument at a certain time and arriving at the courthouse, you know, something other than 2 hours ahead of time at a minimum would be, it'd be nice if we could count on that going forward. Who knows how that will ultimately shake out.
That's right.
But I think from talking with some other appellate justices, though, it does seem like some courts are going to maintain some flexibility on whether Zoom proceedings will continue. Certainly in the right circumstance, you know, going to El Paso or another farther away locale, also depending on the nature of the case, perhaps, like you've got a district attorney's office on one side, and maybe in a criminal case, I think we've talked about, you know, reducing the cost to the parties in appropriate cases by using Zoom. And as we talk about a lot on the show, increasing access to justice by making the court more available. You know, those are good reasons among many to keep Zoom around. But I for one, am happy to be back live in the Court of Appeals and look forward to handling that argument. And
same.
Yeah, it's just going to, I think, be a great experience, because I've really missed it.
Yeah, it's good to have the option again.
Great. Well, I think we've covered everything we set out to do. You got any parting thoughts?
I don't think so. Thanks again for listening. We're glad everybody's still on board, and reach out if you have thoughts, guests, or whatever. We'd love to hear from you. We always love the feedback.
Very good. Until next time.
Thanks for listening to the Texas Appellate Law Podcast, presented by Butler Snow. If you're enjoying the show, please recommend it to your colleagues or leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. We appreciate everyone who has rated the show and otherwise supported us so far. To stay in touch, suggest topics, ask questions, or express interest in coming on the show, visit us online at texapplawpod.com or tweet us at texapplawpod. The views expressed by the participants on this podcast are their own and not those of their law firms, courts, or employers. Nothing you hear on this show establishes an attorney-client relationship or is legal advice.